Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of the Rugby Bits podcast, proudly brought to you by bet.co.za. It's just two of us in the saddle today, Jared and myself. Jared, how are you doing, mate?
I'm good, thanks to you, Sean. Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, just the two of us, but I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, good fun. We get to have our conversation. We can stick it to Cooks and Tuller as much as we can now. They can't even defend themselves.
Yeah, and we don't have to mute Cooks every time he starts on his Finn Russell.
Injured and having the time of his life. He's injured having a jaw at the moment, so it's all good. And Hastings is out as well, I think. So Cooks doesn't have any fly half.
Yeah, it's terrible. I feel bad for Tuller because Hastings was going to be the main man on that tour. He was going to push Blair Kinghorn right to the starting jersey.
Especially after being shunned by the Scotland setup, and he was playing for Gloucester during the Six Nations. Now he gets a look in, and now he's out injured. So it's a tough one, especially I think from a timeline point of view, I think it's possibly the worst time to miss a tour. Like if you're on the fringe, you know, you want to prove yourself to be in the World Cup running, and now he's injured. So that sucks.
Yeah, I think Blair Kinghorn will be pretty happy about it. But yeah, I think we're going straight into the heavy stuff straight away, and we're not even 2 minutes in.
Can you believe it, eh? Always good fun. Always good fun. But I tell you what, as with Rugby Bits Way, we're gonna get started with the first phase. And we had such an incredible question come out this week, and we posted it. We popped it up and got some very interesting, and obviously there's a hell of a lot of debate around it. But essentially, first phase this week is from an international point of view, you can do a swap out. So you can trade one player from one Test nation for another player from another Test nation. And I'll jump straight in. I actually put two in, and both of mine were actually Australia and France swaps or trades. And I was trying to figure out where Australia needed someone, and I thought 13 was probably a space where the Aussies could really use someone. So I figured, why don't we trade Viramie Vakatawa from France and give him to the Wallabies? And then I try to figure out who the Wallabies could use, and it was who the French could use. And I figured Will Skelton would be a great shot. I think the French are pretty tight at the moment. They've got depth all over the show, but I put in Will Skelton. Jared, what are your thoughts on that, mate?
I do quite like it. I do think that Australia are struggling a bit with their heavies, but they decided they're not going to select Will Skelton this July series, so they obviously think they can go without him. So I think it's a great swap for them because you can have Paul Willemse absolutely pelt Oaks for 40 minutes, and then at halftime you just bring him off, say, job well done, sir, and you throw Will Skelton at them. Like that is a terrifying thought. And them sharing the pitch.
Both. Yes. That's what I want. I want Willemse at four and Skelton at five, and they're just going to absolutely obliterate people for 80 minutes.
And it works, especially if they still have like Jelinic and Kreton and Kroos and those guys in the back row. It definitely works that they can have those two in the second row, because you don't need them for lineouts. Like you just plant them out there in between the centers, and you've got two like extra 12s, like big 12s running at you.
Yes, imagine. My other one was actually also something I thought maybe the Wallabies could do with a good captain leader and a quality eight. So Charles Olivon for the Wallabies. And then I'm going to upset a few people, and very much you as well, but Marika Korobeti will go to France. He'll play on the left wing. I mean, you've got Damien Penaud or Teddy Thomas on the right, and then on the left, you've got Korobeti, and obviously you've got Villiers waiting in the wings. But I think Korobeti, with the way he runs and how he plays, would be a massive asset for the French.
Yeah, I think the French would love to have him. I don't know if it's very much a fair trade, because I do think that Olivon's probably one of the best back rows in the world right now. So I don't think it's a fair trade, but it's a good trade. they also need like a little bit of a hefty Lana jumper in their back row. So Ollie Bon like ticks all those boxes. He's a hell of a player, and I'm glad to see him back. I can't see what he does. I can't wait to see what he does, even if he's playing against Japan. Him and Michael Leitch are going to go right at it.
Yeah, nice. Has Leitch been selected for the Japanese squad?
I just assumed he has been. It would be silly not to pick him.
I hadn't looked. He didn't play this weekend, but I know they play Uruguay. But so I this need to weekend, double check that.
They selected quite a big squad, like similar to ours, but they called one of them like a development squad. And I remember seeing Wimpy van der Walt in their development squad, but he ended up playing this last weekend. So it's, I think they've sort of selected an A and a B team, and they're training separately, but they're both playing for Japan kind of thing. So yeah. I think that's how it's working. But yeah, quite an interesting one.
Nice.
Jamie Joseph is always going down those rabbit holes, I suppose.
Yes, he is. He is. Now, time for you to upset everyone. And who's your first? You've got a couple of trades, but who's your first choice trade?
So the first one I'm going to go with is I'm going to choose two guys that are on the outskirts of their team that could add value to another team. So I'm going to go with Kirtley Beale to South Africa. And he can stop nailing like long range kicks to down us. And we're going to, Jan Grobler is going to head over to Australia. I think they need a hooker and a quality hooker. And Grobler is just that. And Beale can do a job for us at 15, 12, and 10. So he can come in that Frans Wastain role or he can just start. So I'm quite happy with that. If Willie is having an off day, bringing Beale is a like-for-like replacement. They like almost identical players. So I quite like that one. What are your thoughts?
Well, is Krobler capped? He's not capped yet, is he?
No, he's not capped yet.
That's my first point of contention.
Okay, so secondly, then we'll trade him with Joseph. We'll trade him with Joseph.
Hookers in front of him at the moment. So Dweba off.
Yeah, so we'll trade him for Dweba.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I like the idea of getting Beale into the setup, but then we're also going to have so many sort of guys that are covering multiple positions. I'm scared that, the fans want to have players in multiple positions and being able to cover a lot. They either like it or don't like it, but we also need to make sure that we have specialists. But yeah, that's interesting. Do you have some more?
We're also calling for somebody to replace Willie the whole time, and you'll be looking for a like-for-like replacement. Beale is that like-for-like. Like, they played the same kind of rugby when they were both at Wasps, and they killed it. So why can't he do the
Warwick
job?
Lunt. cough.
Not really the same player, I don't think. But
I did call Gallant going to Racing a like-for-like replacement for Kirtley Beale there. So essentially, it's gone full circle now.
Yeah, fair enough. I saw a lot of guys put stuff out on Twitter, replying to our tweets. And Andre, who's a good friend of the pod, said, no, he wants to swap my Herban tag Furlong. And I didn't see much value in that. I was quite upset with that one. I don't know how you feel about that one, Sean.
I'm with you. We can't. Firstly, I don't see the point in swapping same position for same position. And they both are. They're probably Tag Furlong's been up and down a little bit, but they're both up there with possibly the two best props on the tight head in the world. So it's kind of like swapping one for number two, except we've got a baller in Furlong and Mal Herbert just does all the hard graft and scrums everyone to death.
Yeah, exactly. So like we would be losing in the scrum all of a sudden. Like that's not South African DNA. Like no disrespect to Furlong, but he's no Mal Herbert when it comes to the front row. There's a different breed there.
So that's not making the list, right? Scratch that. No. And we've just lost a listener.
Andre will stick with us. He can take it. He's a Bulls supporter. They've been through tough times. I'm sure he can take one shot. That's on a podcast. She say
way too early. Okay, who else we got? I know we got such great replies.
Yeah, we did. So we got one from Safa DuPont Fan. I love the name. But he says South Africa gets Hugo Keenan and Ireland get Thomas Du Toit. I think that's a very great trade for both teams, but I sort of feel like both teams are like losing quite a bit from it as well. Like how the hell do Australia replace Keenan? And yeah, I'm just a fan of Thomas Du Toit. I feel a heart sore about that.
Yeah, I tell you, currently, I will be honest with you, if Hugo Keenan was South African and because he hasn't been like consistently really, really good for a while, like he has been a little bit up and down, he'd be in the same boat as Valilleri. Everyone would want his head on a plate anyway. So that's okay. I don't want to lose Thomas Du Toit now. I think I was actually just chatting to a couple of mates on a WhatsApp group and saying that we are very likely going to be in the rather, I don't want to say unique, because it's unique with Nyakane as it is, but the rather ludicrous position of being an international rugby side that has two props in their squad that can play both sides at test level. And Thomas Du Toit is getting there, which it's ludicrous to think that we can have two, let alone one. I mean, it's bonkers.
And I mentioned on one of the pods, I think it was last week, that Jacques Nienaber said last year that Vincent Koch can play both sides of the scrum. And I said I haven't seen him do it in a long time. And I know he can play loose head. But, I mean, would you put Vincent Koch in the starting lineout at loose head for a test match?
No. There's a number of reasons. I'm a bit nervous. At loose head.
Yeah. But just chuck him in head. The starting line. Yeah, exactly. Because that's what Jacques reckons, is that he can play loose head.
I'm a bit nervous because I haven't seen him play then, also because I don't know a hell of a lot about what goes on in front row, being a back and all. But to be fair, when Jacques Nienaber says that he's happy to try that out, then who the hell am I to argue, to be quite frank?
Yeah, that's sort of how I thought about it as well. And with Saracens playing in the championship, I'm pretty sure he might have ventured into that loose head role. So, yeah. But anyway, just moving on a bit. Fellow podcaster, Rugby Fixation, they mentioned Scott Seo goes to New Zealand and Australia gets Samasio Takahio. Takahayo, can you correct me there, Sean? The hooker from the Chiefs.
I need to see his name I'll get it now. So basically everyone is saying that Australia are struggling at hooker. It's quite evident.
Yeah. So I think New Zealand have a bit of an issue at prop as well. So one of my other mentions was Thomas Du Toit going to New Zealand, and we get Richie Mwanga, and they can then stop this thing of, do we play Barrett or do we play Mwanga? Now they don't have a choice; they have to play Barrett, and we get Mwanga in exchange, which I think is a pretty fair trade.
Who would you still start? Would you put Mwanga on the bench and start Pollard?
No, I'd start Richie Mwanga straight away.
Yeah, just checking.
So I've also got another. I've got another very left field one for you to react to from myself. But as presidents and vice presidents of the Reinhard Alstadt Club, just so he can get a bit more minutes, we switch him out to England and we get George Ford in return. What do you think about that one?
No. I'm now currently president after that. And you're not even vice president anymore. You're just basically a groupie. And no, you can't do that. But it's a good shot, I suppose. He'll probably play a little bit more, but how do you see the balance working between Itoje, Elstad, and Laws? Because I'm thinking Johnny Hill was probably first choice five if he's fit. So then, and Launchbury's going to be in the mix, but he is kind of on the way out. So how are you going? Is Elstad going to be on the bench? Will he take Laws' place? Will laws move to five? That's interesting.
Yeah, you see, there's a lot of ways you can go about it because Itojo is effectively the like new number five lock that he's running the line at, which is something I think Heal can do, but they now entrust in Yules to do it with Heal still a bit injured. But I'd put Itojo at five, put Alstat or Laws in at four, either one, and the other one plays Blindside. So then you get a Peter Steph Dutoy, Eben Etzebeth, Franco Morstat mixed with England. And like we've said before, Eddie Jones is just trying to replicate the box. That's what his mission's been since 2019. He wants that meme pack.
Yeah. That's adding quite a lot of beef and a lot of work to the England pack. That would be very interesting. I'd love to hear what Proudfoot and Eddie Jones would have to say about this. Like hypothetically, if it happened, how would they be able to manage it? You know, how would they?
Yeah.
What would they do? How do they see it as unfolding? So that'll be awesome. But yeah, sheesh.
So. Just there's some beauts here in the replies. We got Ian Hazen, I think. I don't know if that's a play on Eden Hazard or something like that. But he says Ireland would get Will Skelton and Australia would get Jonathan Sexton. I think this is one of the best ones I've seen in the replies.
Yeah. So what would you start, Byrne and Skelton for Ireland? Or Skelton and Ryan.
Yeah, Skelton and Ryan. You got Ryan running your lineouts, and you got Skelton playing that tight head lock position.
And Byrne on the side.
Yeah.
I suppose Josh would be there.
Yeah, you got Josh. That's quite a good one. You got Peter Omani. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's going to bench. So,
no, he's not. I see here, Sonny also says Andre Esterhazen to New Zealand and South Africa gets Richie Mwanga. That's also quite a tasty one.
Good, good. Because I know you won't agree, but I think New Zealand, with the injuries and the form issues, could really probably use a solid 12.
Yeah, but God, you can play 13, so it's fine. Then also the couch referee said Stephen Kitsoff to Ireland, which hurts. But we get Josh van der Vlier back in the Springbok jersey.
That balancing our back three with that would be something quite interesting.
And then also Lewis Elliott says Thomas Dutoy to America and South Africa get AJ McGinty. Now, I would love AJ to play for South Africa, but do USA really need a tight end with Lomasetti and Joe Tetti there?
They are getting a loose head and a tight head who is class. Yeah. So
for
a tier two nation to have the ability of that would be incredible. That's a massive shot. A great one too.
Yeah, that's also a very good one. Now that you mentioned that he can play a loose head, it's something that just slips in my mind every now and then, despite the fact we talk about it all the time. Then I think this is the last one that we'll do is Rian Lowe, also another avid listener of the pod. He says George North to Italy and Wales gets Angie Capuso.
Wow.
What's your thoughts on that one?
Well, North would have to play midfield. That's a great shot for Italy. He would wreak havoc, and I reckon him and Monty Ioane together linking up would be crazy. And then Capuzzo's the wing, right?
Yeah, he's that wing fullback that played for Grenoble and he's going to Toulouse.
Toulouse, yes. So, yeah, that's very interesting. I think I don't think Wales have a massive problem with wingers. I think they'd have a problem with wingers being fit enough, long enough to hold their form. So that'll be interesting. But, I mean, he's a flippin' live wire.
Well, I mean, you've got him and Liam Williams then playing. You can put Williams on the wing. You can play Capuzzo at fullback or vice versa. And
you've got McNichol. You've got Halfpenny.
Yeah, but Halfpenny hasn't played in about two years, unfortunately. Mm. But you also have Lewis Rees-Zammit on the one wing. So you've got a hell of a lot of pace there in the outside backs.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Well, awesome. That was a great first phase. I loved it. And I'm looking forward. I'm loving that we do them every week. It's so awesome seeing the replies. But we're going to have to move on from that. And I think if we tackle the finals from this weekend in chronological order, I think it's only right that we start with Super Rugby. But Jared, did you, like we all know, the Crusaders machine. And as Cook said a couple of weeks back, he's like, you know, the Blues are doing well and they're going to make the final. Let's just hope that the Crusaders don't make the final because they will lose. And then Tyler laughed at him. And now, pity we can't have that conversation with the two of them because that would be some decent banter. But you don't ever want to play the Crusaders in any final or any knockout game. But I didn't expect the Blues to be shut down as much as they were.
I thought it would be a lot closer than it was. But it was also like a feeling of, can somebody actually down this Crusaders team? Like Scott Robertson have them firing on all cylinders once they get into those playoffs. And you just sort of need to find a way to beat them. And the Blues looked like they had the team to be able to do it. But it's just that they call it the Rolls Royce pack in New Zealand. And Richie Mwanga just gets an armchair ride on the back of it. And it's not too far off, I don't think.
The pack mostly is
All Blacks. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I tell you, you know what blew me away? Like, we all know Hoskins Tutu, and we all know what he can bring to the game. He was the game's top tackler with 24. He only beat one defender and only made 7 carries. With a guy like Hoskins Tutu, you want him in space. You want him running. You want him working. But he made 24 tackles. Then the top tackler, number 2, 3, 4, and 5, were all from the Blues, and they were all tight 5. It was Eklund, the hooker, Hodgman, the prop, Robinson at 5, and Nipolaulala at 3. And they made, like, all 15-plus tackles. Like, it's crazy. The top 7 tacklers of the game were the Blues, and they basically just got abused. They got abused. Yep. But I was so there, a lot of guys were jumping all over Beauden Barrett saying he's not all that. It's Richie Mwanga is the best. But Beauden Barrett got nothing. He really got nothing. And to be fair, Mwanga didn't have many super exciting moments, well, too many, because they were also pretty well wrapped up. But he was just pushing people back and stuff. But how do you get, the fact that they shut down Tuivasa-Sheck the way they did, I was super impressed with that. He has been having such a good season. He's been playing so well at 12. He's literally been their man, and the Crusaders just said, no, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, I jumped on the game quite late, and the whole time I was watching, it was like he wasn't even playing. Like he was anonymous, and I haven't seen him like that the entire season. So, yeah, Jack Godhew doing the God's work there. Okay, we have to put it out there, Sean. He did it.
you're trying to bait me. What I am going to say is Goodhew was also not very, very prevalent in that game. His defense. So the Crusaders midfield defense was good, and I called Havili to get worked over by Tuivasa-Sheck. Havili had a better game than Goodhue, without a shadow of a doubt. And I understand that the midfield cannot work unless a 13 is in good form, so I'll give you that. But I still think Goodhue's a 12. However, they managed to wrap and keep Tuivasa-Sheck and Ioane quiet. Now, I don't believe it's massively hard to keep Ioane quiet because I think he's still got a lot to learn. But I thought the Crusaders did so well to just absolutely nullify 10, 12, and 13. Havili was brilliant. That is the one thing I will say. He was excellent.
He really does add value to that Crusaders team in whichever position he plays. And I think last year we saw bits of him doing it for the All Blacks. And yeah, I'm a big fan of his, a really big fan of his. And you know that. Another player that I'm actually quite a big fan of is Sam Whitelock. And I don't know if you saw afterwards, they said he actually played the game with a broken finger or a broken hand, which is insane for a lock to do. A thumb. Yeah, a thumb. But still, thumb.
For... and he's in doubt. He's in doubt for the June tests.
July tests. Yeah,
I don't even know. Yeah, I don't know where we are
but
now.
But still, yeah, it's not quite Andre Hubert, but still, a hell of an effort from a second rower to do that. And without a doubt, he got through a mountain of work. That's a prerequisite when it comes to Sam Whitelock. It's every game you're going to get 20 odd rucks, 10 odd tackles at least, and a ton of ball carrying.
Yeah, excellent. He did so well. He actually missed the semi-final against the Chiefs because of that thumb, and then he came back. So that was quite something.
Well, fair play
and
to
in
him,
wrapping up, yeah, it is brilliant. And in wrapping up the Super Rugby, anything?
It's just another season, another year for the Crusaders to win. I think the Blues can be incredibly proud of what they did. And I feel bad for Luke Romano particularly because he didn't get one over the Crusaders again. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Scott Robertson's going to have to leave at some stage. And that's when the competition is going to get a lot more interesting, especially with the South Africans gone. I think it has lost a little bit of shine. But it's still a hell of a competitive tournament until you play the Crusaders in a playoff match.
Yes, just don't play them in playoffs, that's all. They didn't have a great season, as they normally do, but in typical Crusaders fashion, they always start slow and build hard, so they did well. Okay, so wrapping up in New Zealand and with Super Rugby Pacific and looking forward to watching the test matches coming up. It's for those that don't know, it's Australia versus England and then New Zealand versus Ireland. So we're in for some great rugby coming up with Southern Hemisphere sides. But going straight into Premiership Rugby, what a flipping game. And can Freddie Burns just take a bow, my man? Leicester Tigers beat Saracens. Freddie Burns came onto the field with after 23 minutes because George Ford injured himself. And I've seen now subsequently that it looks like it's an Achilles injury, which is quite bad. Well, it's not great. But yeah, Freddie Burns nailing a drop kick to win it. I mean, what a journey he's had in the last 12 months.
Yeah, and I saw it, Rich Freeman put it out that he missed the drop goal for the Japanese. I think he played for the Shuttles in their...
yes. In the second
relegation promotion game, yes. And he missed that drop goal and 12 months later about he's namely one for Leicester Tigers to win the Premiership. I mean,
and remember before that when he was at Bath, he made an absolute hash of that try in the Champions Cup.
Yeah, and that pretty much ended his Premiership career with him.
Yeah, and he left and he went to Japan. So he's had a roller coaster, and I'll tell you something. What a way to come back and do it, to beat Saracens. Saracens looked dead on their feet for many parts of that game, but Saracens fit into that group of teams you don't ever want to play in a knockout. And they really looked shattered, but flipped. They just kept going and stayed in the mix and just kept believing.
And how good was the Vunipola brothers, and a special word for Vincent Koch, Mr. Incredible. All three of those were like outstanding in the game.
Yes, they were brilliant. I thought Billy Vunipola was very interesting. I really found it interesting with all his carries and everything, how slow he approached contact. It's almost like he stopped without running away from anyone. It was maybe that's how Mark McCall needed in the second half to maybe preserve the players because the players were getting tired. I'm not sure, but it was such an interesting thing. But Billy had a great game, earned himself a recall into the England squad to go to Australia, as I mentioned. But I mean, Vincent Koch,
a recall or do you think he's replacing Alex Dombrandt? Because Dombrandt got injured against the Barbarians.
I was just gonna say when I mentioned that and you started asking me that question, I just realized that he's come in probably for Dombrandt, but he was always on the fringes and he's been playing well enough the last probably month, 2 months anyway for Saracens that he's totally deserved that recall. You know, you can't go wrong with Billy on form. You know, you're not going to lose anything, and you know that he's going to do his job. So yeah, but
yeah, you know, just adding 130 kilos to your back row.
Yeah, and 130 kilos of someone who wants to prove a point is also a dangerous combination. But yeah, a couple of players that are leaving Leicester. Ellis Genge, captained the side. He's off to Bristol. What an incredible way to finish, to win the title. George Ford's obviously leaving. He's going to Sale. Obviously, massive, massive moment for the Youngs family. Like, you know, with everything that, that's been going on, like, it's just a great story all round for Leicester. It was flipping amazing. But yes, Vincent Cock leaving Saracens. But Jasper Visser, I was so glad the game was obviously on TV and there wasn't a lot of other rugby, so a lot of the South African fans could actually watch Visser play, because he was phenomenal. And there seems to be it's weird. Everyone's like forgotten about him, and they kind of think that he was a plug the gap kind of a player for Dwayne. But I was impressed with him in the Springbok jersey, and he's been just smashing the door down in England. So he's definitely going to be our first choice eight against Wales. Like, there's no doubt about it in my mind.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we always speak about how the Springboks wants a physically dominant pack. And when I was watching the Leicester game, every single contact that he goes into, it seems bone shattering. It's like watching Willem Alberts in his prime. Like, when Willem Alberts hits somebody with a ball carry or hits someone in defense, you just, the guy's head always seems to rock back. It doesn't matter where he hits him. It just, like, you can feel it just watching it. And I don't know, maybe I'm over exaggerating, but to me it feels like that. Like, every time he hits somebody or gets hit, like, that person is the guy that's actually feeling the pain, not Jasper.
Exactly. He hits hard. He hits like a ton of bricks. So I'm looking forward to seeing him against Wales. But yeah, incredible. Saracens nearly went all the way for their first time back after being relegated, or dropped down a league for the salary cap infringements. And I thought the commentators did well on Saturday to highlight, you know, people are going to hate them regardless of anything that happens, but they do really well and they're working really hard. But they are a tight unit. And I don't doubt in my mind that they're going to come back strong, or stronger. They're a little bit more focused. They're going to be in the Champions Cup next year again. They weren't in it this year. So, you know, there's a lot going on. So I think we are in for some pretty impressive Premiership rugby in the next 3 to 4 years. I predict Bath are going to be coming up in the next season or two. I really feel that they are going to make a move. I think Saracens are always going to be there. I think Bristol are going to have to make an early move. I think they are capable of doing it. I'm interested to see what happens next year. Leicester are obviously going to be in the mix. Quins are going to be there and thereabouts. You know, they're guys, you know, Saints are there. They are a lot more stronger Premiership sides at the moment.
Yeah, especially when you look at it in the Premiership. You spoke about Saracens coming from the Championship going straight into the final, but Leicester Tigers would have got relegated had it not been for Saracens' salary cap infringement. So that's also a hell of a story from them, adding to everything else that we've said about them. So, yeah.
Two seasons ago, they were last. Yeah, and then last season, they finished sixth. And then this season they finished champions. So that is a proper growth.
Yeah, a hell of a growth. The one thing that I do think is going to hamper these English sides is their salary caps being dropped and they losing a marquee signing. So I think that is going to have a massive impact for them, with trying to keep up with the pack, especially with the French side. So I think that's the one downside and the one obstacle that they really have to overcome. They have to be smart about who they sign in and how much they sign in them for, and look into their academies maybe a bit better.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is going to – I do foresee it causing more issues in the short term. And sides are going to just have to be clever on how they work about it. They're really going to have to, and by clever, I don't mean accounting clever. I mean clever in terms of where they spend their money. They need to make sure that you can't afford to get it wrong. But yeah, wrapping up the Premiership, any final thoughts on that?
Yeah, I just think it was an entertaining tournament, and especially with the Champions Cup next season, hopefully we get it a bit more on South African TV and people can follow it a bit more. There's a ton of guys that are doing brilliantly for the English clubs, and it's a hell of an entertaining league. The last thing that I'll add is well done to the Liebenberg family. They've now got a Champions Cup winner and a Premiership League winner this season. Honro obviously winning it with Leicester Tigers, and Vian finishing his career with La Rochelle as a Champions Cup winner. It's pretty
amazing.
Awesome.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah. Christmas this year is going to be fun. Well,
yeah,
probably,
exactly. Bragging rights on the line here.
Yeah, what's worth more? So
yeah,
that's impressive. Okay, now obviously we've done the curtain raiser. We have to do the main event. And the main event is none other than the United Rugby Championship. And what a flippant... So firstly, to have the Bulls and Stormers in the final was just something quite extraordinary considering how everyone started. And I was thinking back at what we were saying about the Stormers, and I was worried for them. And I really didn't think that they were connecting. And they come on and play in the final, and then the Stormers go on and win it in very un-Stormers-like fashion. They started exceptionally slow. They've historically this season, they've kind of been striking fast in a game, and they've been scoring early, and they've been working that, and then kind of plateauing, and then managing to hold on and work the wins. But now, I mean, on Saturday, They were struggling for 40 minutes. They were struggling against the Bulls. The Bulls were all over them, and I thought the Stormers did exceptionally well to go into the sheds at still within a touch of the game. And they came out in the second half, and the Bulls, I wouldn't say the Bulls faded. I think the Stormers picked it up, and they got that belief, and the fans got behind them, and that's all she wrote. Game over, and the Stormers are the URC champions.
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well there, and it's a sort of like a... It was a little microcosm of the Stormers' season as a whole, that they started off slowly like most of the South African sides did, but they finished strongly. And that's, I think it's John Wooden, one of the basketball coaches in America, said, no, it doesn't matter who starts the game, it matters who finishes it. And yeah, the Stormers finished it well.
Yeah, they did. I unfortunately wasn't there. It would have been great to be there. But I was just so impressed. Like the Stormers had a few injuries. They moved some players around. I thought Sergio Peterson did really well for his first game in a while. I mean, he played Curry Cup the week before. I thought that he was out of the mix. But yeah, I did well. And Damian Willemse, again, an absolute machine. I think he's kind of answered himself and the coaches and everyone else's questions about where he really wants to play and where he,
yes,
like that balance between where he wants to and can play versus where he wants to play. Because I still think that he wanted to play 10 in the very beginning. He saw himself as a fly half, but my issues with him was he carried so much, and then it never looked like he wanted to play 15. And then now he's playing 12, and it looks like it's all come together. He's getting the love of being able to be close to the 10 channel. He can carry it up for days. He can distribute if he wants. And he often goes back and helps Gelant out at 15. So I think he's found his most perfect sweet spot.
I think he's grown a hell of a lot as a player as well. In that he's more trusting in his players, his fellow teammates, and willing to offload some of the duties and not want to kick everything and run everything and control the game like a fly half would. So I think him coming to terms that he wasn't quite fitted for a test fly half has done him immensely well.
Yeah. And the thing is the greatest thing for him and his Springbok aspirations is he's part of the squad. He's part of the squad as someone that can play multiple positions, but he's starting to put pressure on Delendi. However, it was quite clear where the Springbok coaches see him fitting in because they've brought Esterhazen back. So it's going to be very interesting. And I think what I was initially worried about was where was Willemse going to fit. And a piece I wrote early on in the year was about Willemse, the only way he's going to be in the Springbok squad is as player 23 in a 6-2 split, that player that covers 10, 12, 15, you know, when you've only got two backs on the bench. And I still think that is very, I still think that is mostly true at the moment. However, he is growing his game in another space that he's starting to put his hand up, where he's starting to ask those questions of the coaches and other players, which is really where everyone wants to be. And I'm loving it. And I'm loving it at the moment. And I thought Manny Lubbock, you know, had a good game after last week. He was pretty handy again this week. There was a lot of kicking going on in the game, though. Shit, man.
Yeah, yeah, it was. It was a real South African playoff match with that amount of kicking. And just to fast forward right to the end of the match, we've given Herschel Yankees a lot of shit, but I watched that pass that he gave to Lubbock for the drop goal, and just as it was just pinpoint, like it was just perfect the way he gave it in a way that it looked like he was going to pass it off to the forwards and then just hooked it back for Lubbock. And it just sets up so nicely for Lubbock. And it, if you look at the other drop goals, there was a drop goal for Richie Mwanga. There was a drop goal for Freddie Burns. There was two others in the Bordeaux semi-final. And that pass was the best of the lot, I reckon. That's how good it is. In a clutch moment like that, that's when you want your players to step up. And just a slight little hat tip to Herschel Yankees for that one, because I don't think he'll get too much praise for that performance overall, but that pass was class.
Yeah. I think, listen, it was a scrappy game all around. The Stormers were exceptionally scrappy in the first 40. There was a lot of kicking, but a lot of inaccurate kicking. And the Bulls, that's their gravy, you know, to keep it tight, to not be flash. And I thought Harold Forster had a decent game, but again, the Bulls midfield was wrapped up. And I thought, even though it was scrappy, the Bulls were on top. They were in a better position. I really thought they were looking so good to take the title. And second half, I don't know what was said by Dobbo and Rito and the rest of the guys, but basically Stormers came out and said, "We'll show you." And a shout out to Ron Nell. I think he's probably been the consistent and a very, very important but unsung hero in that Stormers backline.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty solid as well. But the one player we definitely have to shout out is Dion Fourie, and just his season as a whole and his performance in the final. And like I said, when it matters most and you want the guys to put their hand up, he thrusted his hand up and he was brilliant. Like, I was laughing at Skalk Berger talking about him before the game, thinking, yes, he skulks busy praising this oak. Let's hope that he doesn't have a shocker and get sent off or something. And all of Skulk's words that he said about him, he's been a menace at the breakdown and not fun to play against, all came to light the minute the first whistle went. And Dion was just amazing.
Yeah. So I tell you, I am going to rock the boat immensely now. There are a couple of things I want to talk about, and they are, I know a couple of Bulls fans were complaining about the referee and the typical response from Stormers fans and anyone else is, you know, if you lose, you're always going to complain. But I want to highlight three sort of plays. There are five things that I want to kind of mention, but three really, really important plays. So the one, I thought Dion Fourie got very lucky with a couple of his turnovers and penalty wins, especially in the first half, because he was most certainly hands on the deck quite often. But those are touch and go. The Evan Roos try, I think, could very easily be in a double movement. However, it also was touch and go. But he, in my view, propelled himself forward with his knees. Yes. He propelled himself forward with his knees. So that for me is a second movement. But it was a little bit tight and whatever. But I said five things. There are four things. There are two things for me and two things that make a massive difference in the game, because they are a try for the Stormers and the other one was the final play of the game. But the try that Fenta scored, that driving maul, Evan Roos joins that maul blatantly from the side and about a meter in front of the ball carrier. Now, I'm sorry, it wasn't even touch and go, but the mall, people joining the mall seems to have been overlooked by referees, but that is a blatant penalty. He's come in from the side, he's joined, couldn't even put his arm out and touch the ball carrier. He was so far away from him. I really think that was appalling. And the other thing that I want to talk about is the Haaland turnover at the end of the game when the Storms kicked it out to win it. That was a ruck. There's no doubt in my mind. He was the second man there. There was a ruck formed. He's grabbed the arm in there, pulled the ball like ref gone, play on, ball's come out, not really having a look at it. And those are two vital, vital, vital moments. And it's concerning for me more than anything. I thought the Stormers deserved to win. I really do. It was a tight game, but I thought they deserved to win with their second half performance and being in touch in the first half. I really thought that they did enough. However, if you just look at two of those moments, that try and that hands in at the end, they mean a lot in that game. Just those two moments.
No, they do. They do. Unfortunately, it's been a topic of the URC throughout the competition is just how poor the officiating has been. And it has got better as the tournament's gone on. I think it's you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's Tupper Henning that's now heading them up. And he's made a hell of a difference. So I do feel for the Bulls, and I sympathize with them, but at the end of the day, I do think the best team won it in the end. I think Jake's side had a lot of opportunities that they just weren't clinical enough for, and that's just one of those things. It's sometimes the ball just does not bounce your way, whether it's a referee decision or it's that last pass. And unfortunately for the Bulls, it just wasn't their day. I'm trying not to. I don't want to like just brush off your calls.
No,
I think
no.
Jake's also he came out in the press conference and he also came out with I'm not trying to criticize the referee, but and I'm not whining, but so
both of those moments are massive. It's not like Dion Fury. Yeah. Where he went in and touched the ground and then went back on the ball, where you're like, no, that kind of could have gone both ways. These two were clear cut for me and hardly a peep from people about that. And I was like, sheesh, man, surely that's not right.
Sean, anyway, we're both Shark supporters. We're still hurting about that forward pass in 07. So
aren't we all?
And now we're here, we're talking about Bulls decisions that gone the wrong way.
Yeah, well, you've defected, mate. I'm like the only Shark supporter on this pod at the moment. But I will say one thing. Like in closing up on the Stormers and the Bulls, they are, I believe, in very, very, very good place for the Champions Cup and the URC next season. I think the Bulls, actually, funny enough, could possibly be in a better place. The Stormers are losing a few players. There will be some movement, I believe. That Willie LaRue could be making his way to Cape Town to play for the Stormers. They're obviously looking to replace Haaland because the Stormers are losing Haaland. But I think the Stormers are in a relatively good space, and I think this will boost them as a squad. And can we have a shout out for Hachiva Daimani, who is it's Monday, it's Tuesday evening, and it's 6 p.m. and I believe he's still having a great time.
So I jumped on his TikTok, his Instagram just before coming onto the pod, and I saw he actually wrote an exam today. So he paused his celebrations and wrote an exam and let his clothes dry, and he's now heading back out. So it hasn't stopped just yet.
What a legend. An absolute legend. I hope he does well in his exam, because you don't want that exam to go tits up for obvious reasons. The fact that he's obviously been pretty good at managing himself on social media and still getting in some study hours. Well played, man. That's world class. So massive shout out to Hachiva Daimani, who honestly, as probably he was, I don't know, it's really hard to pick the player that grew the most this season for the Stormers, but he most certainly will be up there. You know, he's forced his way into the side and basically become one of those first choice players, like without a doubt. So I'm super,
yeah,
super
him and,
stoked for him.
Junior Pocamelo have had an incredible season there, and hats off to them. They've haven't quite had it their way with the Lions and Cheetahs, but are finally, yeah, showing what they're made of.
Find their feet in Cape Town, in beautiful Cape Town.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's it. I just think that they're looking good for next season for the Champions Cup, the Bulls and the Sharks. The Lions, I think, are probably going to be pretty much of the same next year. And I think, the Bulls and the Stormers, the Lions are going to be pretty much the same. And I think the Sharks are going to have a little bit of a shakeup, and they're going to have some hard conversations, but I still think that they are going to be competitive in the Champions Cup next year.
Yeah, I think they definitely will be more competitive in the Champions Cup. The one thing that I'm going to be interested, particularly with the Lions, is not next season, but the season afterwards. With them playing in the Challenge Cup, we won't expect them to play a full-strength side, but those youngsters not playing Curry Cup, but playing Challenge Cup instead, I think is a hell of a big jump for them, and it could do them extremely well.
I think it'll be great for them and the union as a whole moving forward.
Yes.
I think the getting that exposure, because the first few rounds of the Champions Cup, of the Challenge Cup, first few rounds, the teams go hard. Like, because
yeah, they do.
It's only when they know that they're not in the mix anymore that they start drafting in some youngsters, and then they're like, cool, let's preserve for our domestic competitions. But they will go hard.
Or if the domestic is getting a bit too tight for their liking.
Yes. Yeah, it all depends. So it's quite a lot of balance. There's no relegation. There's no relegation in the URC, which changes our strategy. Obviously, the top 14, there's relegation. And obviously, in the Premiership, there is, but not next year, as far as I know. I think it's only the year after. So should be interesting. And then other than that, I think we're going to have to wrap up. Just a quick mention of the Curry Cup. We have an incredible Curry Cup final coming up. The Griquas beat the Bulls at Loftus to host the Curry Cup final, and they will face the Pumas, who beat the Cheetahs in Bloom. So we're in for an incredible one there. And then the only other thing coming up this weekend is a top 14 final, and that would be Castre or Cast, who beat Toulouse at home. And another, we haven't seen Cast play with this sort of dominance for such long periods of time. They finished top of the log. You know, normally they sneak in and then fight hard in the playoffs. And they're facing Montpellier, who beat Bordeaux. So we're in for a cracking top 14 final this weekend. Other than that, it's the MLR final in the US. Rugby United New York are playing the Seawolves. And then obviously another quick one, Jared, a couple of minutes, but I don't know if you watched the Barbarians game against England this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Well, I saw bits of it, but Jesse, what a game. It's always good when you see England get a bit of a hiding, even if it is a second string England side without their Tigers and Saracens players.
Yeah. I'm not reading too much into it. I know a lot of people are freaking out. That, like, it didn't really bother me. I'm quite aware that French side, that Barbarian side, was a very strong one, coached by Fabien Galtier. So a lot of the French players are looking to earn themselves a call-up. And, you know, they were playing for different reasons. They weren't playing as Barbarians. Mm. They were playing as curtain raiser to hopefully get the French coach to select them. They played incredibly well. Will Skelton got sent off, but they almost got stronger after that. George Cruz was phenomenal, kicking three conversions. But
and back healing the last one.
Yeah, like a boss. The best was the first one. He pushed the fly off out the way so he could take the kick.
Yeah.
I was like, you go, boy.
So,
you're not going to argue
so
with
just
George Cruz. He's a monster.
Just a stat there on Will Skelton. He's the first Barbarian to be sent off. I don't know if that's a stat that you really want, but it's a Barbarian stat that he can hold to forever.
Nice. And to be fair, most people in the world, he was up there. The odds would have been very, very small for him to get sent off. He does enjoy a little bit of a rough and tumble every now and then. But yeah, a great game. But yeah, that was pretty much wrapping up the weekend. A very, very short wrap up in a nutshell. And we've obviously got a few things to look forward to this week. Big thing this week for me is the South African under 20s are playing in a tournament in Italy with the Six Nations sides plus South Africa and Georgia. So we play England on Friday. France, Ireland are playing on Friday, and then on Saturday, Scotland, Wales, and Italy, Georgia, which should be good. Sasha Ngomezulu is captaining the under 20s.
It's such a great thing that we finally involved in one of these competitions before that's not a World Under 20 Championship. I know we haven't had that for a while, but it's always nice to play the other teams a bit more. Like sometimes we would only get to play England once in the Under 20 World Championship. Now, maybe we can sneak in another game against them depending on how the playoffs work. But we've got a real tough round of fixtures. I mean, I think we've drawn on the hard side of the pool of the tournament.
Yes, we most certainly are.
I think it's going to be great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the pools are England, South Africa, France, and Ireland in pool A. And pool B is Italy, Georgia, Scotland, and Wales. So it's going to be a tough one. But y'all looking forward to that. That's been played on Friday. It is on YouTube. I'm fairly confident it'll be shown on Supersport. But agreed, Jared, I'd love the under-20s playing more rugby outside of the World Championship. And we normally play Argentina. I know we've played Argentina the last couple of years, but hopefully we get more. But yeah, I think in closing, a couple of rugby shout-outs to finish up. Jared, I put you on the spot a little bit there, but do you have a rugby shout-out for us?
Yeah, I'll go straight to France and a shout-out to Jan Saffertain. He was voted Miri Olympics player of the semifinals. And yeah, he pretty much led Montpellier to victory over Bordeaux. It was a tough, tough game. And he was a real standout. I did post some of his GIFs on Twitter if you want to go check it out. He had a really nice battle with the young Frenchman, Yoram Mafuna. It was a really, really tight game, like I said. So yeah, he's going to be playing for his first and Montpellier's first top 14 trophy if they win it. And the same staying with France, the same for Rory Cockett. He didn't get onto the field for Castres, but what a way it would be for him to end his career with a top 14 title with Cass. So well, yeah, those are my two shout-outs there.
He's won two with them already, but yeah, to end it off with
So it will be his third one.
Yes.
Third one. And then, you sort of touched on it already, but shout out to the Pumas and Greek West for making the Currie Cup final. Nobody really expected them to do it, and good on them for doing so.
Perfect. A little mini one is also to the people of Kimberley and Greek West. You guys are hosting a Currie Cup final. I'm wishing you all the best. A little soft spot for the Greek West. Did a bit of work with them a few years back. I was very fortunate enough to get involved with them. So looking forward to that. My shout out goes to Freddie Burns and Hachiva Diamani, who are powering through like absolute champions and being legends after their title wins this weekend. Freddie Burns was he went into an interview and he just had his shirt on. And he didn't have his shorts on. He had his tights on or whatever. And they're like, "Wear your pants." And he said, "I swapped them for a pint," because he wanted to have a beer after the game. So hats off to him. He also posted a video at like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. where he's got his sunnies on and he's sitting with the Premiership trophy and he's having McDonald's at like 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning, like. He's living his best life. Hachiva Diamani also is basically doing exactly the same, just going out with the medal in match kit, just having the best time and living. Basically, the whole reason why you play is to go on and win titles and do things. And when you do it, you celebrate them and you celebrate them well and responsibly. And it's been flipping amazing. It's been a breath of fresh air for everyone. Another one, Jared, I know you said you got another one and I'm scared I'm going to steal it. But my shout out goes without a shadow of a doubt, my extra one goes to the URC organizers that arranged the medal ceremony handover to the Stormers players with school kids from Cape Town. It was probably one of the most amazing moments I've seen in a post-match presentation in my life.
Yeah, that is the one that I was going to touch on, but I'm going to go more specifically to Marvin Ori, who picked up on it. He gave his scrum cap to one of the little boys. That was just brilliant. I know Squidge and them go off about rugby values, but I don't think this is a rugby value. It was just an awesome, heartwarming, inspiring bit from Marvin. Yeah. That little kid's never going to forget that. And that's sort of what it's all about. So, yeah.
Looking forward to him growing into the scrum cap and wearing it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So hats off to the Stormers, the URC organizers. That was top notch.
Yeah. And I tell you, if you haven't seen this, you've got to go and find it somewhere. I'm sure Jared will be able to share some of the stuff on his Twitter or the Rugby Bits Twitter. The interaction between the players and the kids was incredible. It was one of the best things. If you just go check it out on Twitter, you'll see it. But that I think is probably one of the best ways to wrap up another Rugby Bits pod. Proudly brought to you by bet.co.za, who've been with us from the beginning, and we just want to say thanks very much to them for their support. Please give us a thumbs up, give us a like, give us a rating in the podcast. Spread the word. We love chatting chatting rugby and talking to you guys. Jared, thank you so much, mate. I really appreciate it. An absolute great chat, and looking forward to more.
Yeah, Sean. Thanks a lot, man. And we'll catch up next week.
Okay. Cheers, guys.